What's going on, guys? Your boy Elroy here, and welcome back to the Your Boy Elroy MMA podcast. I am your host, Josh Prep Egina, back again. Another Friday, another fight night weekend, coming off the heels of an incredible pay-per-view weekend. But before we get into that or any other news, rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're using to listen to this. That helps more eyes and ears get to our product. And thank you to those who have been here and those who will come. Let's get into some news. I'm sorry, I had spicy nuggets before I recorded. Bad idea. Let's talk some news this week. Coming off of the great announcement Bellator had last week, Bellator continues to drop news, this week being that they are introducing divisional and pound-for-pound rankings, something that they have lacked. Obviously, I look at the rankings just to matchmake myself. I don't know how much the matchmakers nowadays actually look into the rankings, but that's what Bellator can do with these rankings. I'm looking forward to seeing who's number one in their rankings, pound for pound. I've got to imagine that the Pitbull brother will be number one, and I think it'll come at a perfect time. You know, he's going to come up to another title defense against Emmanuel Sanchez. So if he wins that, he's kind of like a shoe-in to me at number one. Now, another fun question is, how many light heavyweights are going to be there? Because there is obviously killers in the light heavyweight division we spoke about last week. And I can only imagine that once this tournament starts going, a lot of them are going to be on that pound-for-pound list. But the only... So obviously they're going to use members of the media to choose to vote for these rankings. Now, the only person that I recognize from the list of media members that are supposedly voting for the Bellator pound for pound rankings and divisional rankings, the only name I recognize is John Morgan from MMA Junkie. That's probably because that's the only platform that I really look at, along with MMA Fighting and then, of course, ESPN MMA. That's what's weird to me. The MMA Fighting guys always talk about other leagues and organizations, not just the UFC. So I'm surprised that none of those guys were chosen to vote on these rankings. But John Morgan, obviously everybody knows, very respected in the MMA landscape. He's, if you guys don't know him, he is the media member who always gets the first question. A little sip of water. I'm sorry if you hate that sound. he is very well respected, obviously, in the MMA media. Let's get into the criteria for the ranking system. Number one, a fighter must have competed once inside the Bellator cage on a current term with the company to be eligible. A fighter is eligible to be ranked for up to 15 months without competing. A fighter remains eligible for 60 days after an indication of retirement, with the organization ultimately determining if the fighter remains active or and eligible. A fighter is allowed to be actively ranked in two different weight classes and is eligible to be ranked in an additional weight class once they have competed at least once in that division. A fighter must actively compete in each weight class. A period of inactivity longer than 15 months in a given weight class will result in removal from that specific weight class, but not necessarily from another division or the overall rankings pool. (With the exception of that fighter being active actively participating in a World Grand Prix tournament in a different weight class. A fighter serving a non-medical suspension from an overseeing regulatory body or the organization for longer than 6 months will be removed from the rankings eligibility. A fighter will remain eligible with a suspension of 6 months or fewer. The final list of eligible fighters and the weight classes in which they are eligible to be ranked will ultimately be determined by the organization. MMA Fighting states that it is not yet known how strictly the matchmakers will adhere to the rankings and what guarantees, if any, will be made to a fighter who has reached number one contender in their division. So that's eligibility for being voted in. Pretty cut and dry, obviously, what I expect from what's going on in the UFC rankings. But like I said, I gotta imagine Patricio Pitbull is number one. Like, he's that homegrown talent for them. How could they not pick him number one? He's the guy who never left. for better or for worse, of course. I'm not saying that he won't leave, but at this moment, he has yet to leave. And of course, he's the double champ at the moment, you know, Bellator, featherweight, and lightweight champ. So I imagine that they do him the service of placing him number one in their division. He's fought with Bellator since 2010. April 22nd, 2010 was his first fight in Bellator. Since he started at 13-0 in Bellator, and now his record stands at 31-4. Wins over names like Juan Archuleta, Michael Chandler, Henry Corrales, Daniel Strauss, Pat Curran, the list goes on. You know, he's beaten the best of the best. Wilson Hayes, with only dropping losses to Daniel Strauss, Benson Henderson by injury, Pat Curran split decision, and Joe Warren split decision. So he is a great talent, even though he does talk too much. Him stating that Michael Chandler will be champion in the UFC and dominate, he only said that for the simple fact that he believes that he himself is the greatest fighter in the world. So if Michael Chandler, who he beat, can go to the UFC and win a title and dominate, that further proves that he is the best. Moving on from Bellator, we move to MMA retirements. There's been two higher profile retirements in the last few weeks, so I think it's important that we bring them up. Number one being Stefan the Skyscraper Struve. I'm sorry, I felt like I said that wrong. And number two being James Vick. Top 10 fighters in their division at the time in the UFC, just savages. When you look at victories that they've had, Struve most famously finishing Stipe Miocic, and Vic beating people, you know, with names like Jake Matthews and Abel Trujillo. They were great, you know, when they had the chance, but there was a moment in time where both of them just became essentially punching bags, for lack of a better term, at the end of their career. You know, Stefan Struve did get that victory over Marcos Rodrigo de Lima in 2019, but before that he dropped three before and then two right after that. So, you know, going one of six is just not a great look. And then James Vick, you know, after going on a four-fight win streak after losing to Beneil Dariush's first loss. Just look at these names. I mean, he's fighting the best of the best, let's be honest. But this was devastating. Losses to Justin Gaethje, Paul Felder, Dan Hooker, and Nico Price. Leaving the UFC and then getting TKO'd on his feet by Andre Feilho, which is that famous video we saw a few weeks ago. It was just extremely unfortunate. It was not a good look for that ref or James to, you know, just die on his sword. I felt so bad. But I'm happy that they're walking away, and I wish them all the success in the rest of their career. Let's get into some fight announcements. The rebooking of Pedro Munhoz versus Jimmy Rivera next week, February 27th. Then we have Blagoy Ivanov versus Marcin Tybura. We have an extremely, I cannot wait for this fight. Mike Perry versus Daniel Rodriguez. That's April 10th. We have Iwan Kutalaba versus Devin Clark. We have Caitlin Chikagan versus Vivian Arujo. Then we have Shamil Abdurahimov versus Augusto Sakai. And then, stepping in 5 days after an incredible victory, which we will get to, stepping in for the injured Khamzat Chimaev is Bilal, remember the name, Mohammed, against Leon Rocky Edwards on March 13th. Damn, that is a banger. Congratulations to Bilal Mohammed. I was going to wax poetic in about 5 minutes about how great you are and how I'm looking forward to seeing what's next. And now we know, and I cannot wait. Speaking of Bilal Mohammed, let's talk UFC 258. Live from the UFC Apex on Saturday, February 13th, UFC 258 took place. Just my initial thoughts. I thought it was a great card. I think that the prelims delivered with a lot of excitement and just a really, really quick pace, as well as the, excuse me, the main card. I thought the main card was fantastic, but let's get into some results. Starting in the early prelims, the returning Gabe Green puts it on Philip Rowe for the decision victory. I thought Phil Rowe just needed to give more. You know, Gabe Green was beating his legs up really bad battering his legs with leg kicks, kind of leaving Philip Rowe to fight without legs, and it didn't go too well. Gabe Green was on the verge of finishing him. But moving on to the ESPN portion of the prelim, starting off with a really fun scrap. Decision win for Chris Gutierrez over Andre Yule. Again, with the leg kicks, you know, Andre Yule barely could stand. It was crazy. Chris Gutierrez, someone who has finished somebody with leg kicks, so I wouldn't expect anything else. But a really fun fight, you know, Andre Yule connecting with some big shots late, but just too late. We had a really great fight at women's strawweight with Pollyanna Viana getting the finish by armbar submission against Mallory Martin, just taking her arm. Transitions for days on the ground. I really enjoyed watching her jiu-jitsu at play. Mallory Martin just never stood a chance in there. Speaking of never standing a chance, Diego Lima got placed in the game of trying to keep up with Bilal Muhammad, which is damn near impossible. This man runs a marathon in that cage. And he ran circles against Diego Lima. Lima getting pieced up pretty bad, landing some good kicks, but just couldn't get going. And obviously, no jiu-jitsu for him. Bilal fought it off pretty easily and just pieced him up on the feet for three rounds. I really, really enjoyed it. And then the biggest surprise of the night, jiu-jitsu phenom, Rodolfo Vieira, gets submitted by Anthony Fluffy Hernandez in the second round. Daniel Cormier said he's never seen somebody that tired. I think I agree. First off, Rodolfo Vieira, 185. He 100% was like 215 in the cage that night. All muscle. So he definitely drained himself during that weight cut. And then Anthony Hernandez just pieced him up. Really great shots. Fought off the jiu-jitsu. And, you know, that's the first thing Rodolfo went for was a scramble. Tried to get him down. Got him down. Transitions. Anthony Hernandez fought them off constantly. He did get caught in a submission at one point, but refused to tap and was able to get out of it. Weathered the storm, as we said, came out in the second and was able to finish him by Darce choke, which I love. It was a great performance. Warranted $50,000. Congratulations, Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. Moving on to the main card, there was a great fight at middleweight. Maki Pitolo, someone that I really enjoyed on the Contender Series. Really rough run in the UFC thus far. He's won, I believe, one fight on his UFC run out of, I believe, four. And he dropped this fight in the third round. No, yes, he lost this fight in the third round. He was giving Julian Marquez the business for 2.5 rounds and then gets caught in a submission at the end of round three. Just one of the more sad performances. Kind of gave me, not this serious, but if you remember, Misha Tate versus Holly Holm. Holly Holm was on her way to victory. And then got caught by Misha Tate and finished. It was that bad. And his coaches really showed how pissed they were. And unfortunate for us, we had to hear an awful promo by Julian Marquez, which I will not repeat or give any more public acknowledgement about. Moving on to the featherweight division, coming off of his last victory, Ricky Simon defeats Brian Boom Kelleher. Kelleher just couldn't get started in this one. I think it was that cut in that first round that really affected him. And Ricky Simon, once again, I'm going to use the word again, put a relentless pace on Brian Kelleher that it was almost impossible for him to catch up. Ricky gets the victory easily. Moving on to the middleweights, once again, Kelvin Gastelum defeats Ian Heinisch by decision. It was just good to see Kelvin Gastelum in the win column once again. You know, he's lost, I believe, his last three before this. He lost to Izzy, Darren Till, as well as, who was the last one? Jack Hermanson, a quick submission of Kelvin Gastelum. So it was good to see him win once again. Visibly emotional. Just overwhelmed. Happy to be back in that win column. Congratulations to him. I'm looking forward to seeing him fight once again. And I hope we get the best Kelvin Gastelum we've gotten. I had to remind people that 2 years ago now, Kelvin Gastelum had the fight of the year. And very close fight of the year, might I add, in a losing effort. In the co-main event, congratulations to these women for getting this high profile spot. Alexa Grasso putting on a boxing clinic against Macy Barber. Just two rounds of total stand up. I love it. She was able to also showcase how good her ground game was, which I love. And I love the fact that Macy Barber didn't quit and came back and won the third round. So Macy Barber still showing promise. Again, she's like 22 years old right now. And Alexa Grasso is not even 30. I believe she's 27. Both these girls, incredibly young in their career. There's been some bumps, especially Macy, you know, her last two fights, dropping them, first two losses of her career. But I see promise in both these girls. This spot at the top of the card was warranted. It puts a highlight on these women. They do have a tall mountain to climb in Valentina Shevchenko, but keep stringing together victories like this, somebody's got to beat this girl. Everybody can be beaten, right? Moving on to the main event, and what a main event it was. Kamaru Usman finishing Gilbert Burns in the third round. I had it 2-2 going into the third. I thought Gilbert Burns looked fantastic in the first round. Almost putting Kamaru down with a shot. You know, Kamaru able to gain his composure. He readjusted and, you know, it was annoying on the broadcast, but it's so true how much the jab of Kamaru Usman affected this fight. Now, I think, you know, we hear a lot about the Trevor Whitman, you know, strategy with the jab and the fighters that he's trained and their famous jabs. There has to be a way to defend this. There's something in MMA that we're doing wrong, that the jab is just so prevalent and so dominant. I'm looking forward to seeing who can exploit the defense to that with still being able to defend takedowns. But Kamaru Usman, once again, world-class performance against a world-class opposition like Gilbert Burns. Again, him as well, nothing to hang his head about. Just Kamaru Usman is the best in the world at the moment. I stated it right before this fight happened that he is the most unappreciated champion in the UFC. And even after this victory, I stand by that. He does not get the respect he deserves. Now let's talk about post-fight. Obviously, nothing is really going on in the welterweight division. We were waiting for a lot of fights to kind of play themselves out. But Kamaru, as everybody's saying, and I agree, I said it on this night as well, he kind of hands Jorge Masvidal a gift on a silver platter, calling him out, saying that he'll give him a full training camp and finish him this time. And you know what? That's the fight to make. Who else is going to be there? Nobody. There's a lot of fights that still have to play themselves out. So why not run this back? You know, I would have liked to see Colby versus Jorge, but screw it. Kamaru's not dumb. He knows where the money is, and it's right with Jorge Masvidal. I believe that we will see that fight next. Let's talk about this weekend's card live from the UFC Apex. This is my birthday card tomorrow, Saturday, February 20th, if I turn 30. But fight night, Blades versus Lewis. This is a stacked card with a lot of filler, but everything else that's there is extremely high quality. So let's just go over some of the matchups that I'm really excited for. Starting off in the men's featherweight division, the debuting Pat Sabatini, somebody that I've been talking about since the inception of this podcast, facing Rafael Alves. Pat Sabatini coming in on short notice. I'm excited to see this man. He is one of two Philadelphia fighters on this card. We'll get to one later that is a damn good prospect that is fighting a ranked opponent. moving on to the featherweight division, Nate Landwehr versus Julian Arosa. We saw this matchup highlighted in Dana White's If You Don't Know, Now You Know. If you see these guys' highlights, you know why these guys are finishers. They put on fun fights, and I expect this to be a great one as well. Moving on to the bantamweight division, Eddie Wineland brings in John Castaneda. Lightweight, we have Jakar Close versus Luis Pena. We have Jared Gordon versus Danny Chavez. And the highlighted prelim, Andre Arlovsky versus Tom Aspinall. Arlovsky's 50th pro fight in MMA. Crazy. Moving on to this stacked main card. We have at middleweight, Phil Hawes versus Nasiruddin Imavov. I'm sorry. Philip Hawes, a finishing machine on a 5-fight win streak, and Imavov on a 6-fight win streak. Again, these guys were highlighted in Dana White's If You Don't Know, Now You Know. If you've seen Philip Hawes' last fight, you'll know why. At the heavyweights, we have the Philly boy himself, Chris Daukaus, taking on Alexei Oleinik. I cannot wait for this. Daukaus has looked fantastic as of late on the UFC roster, and I expect him to continue to climb up the ranks against Alexei Oleinik. If you don't know, Chris Daukaus has fantastic jiu-jitsu, so I expect him to finish Alexei Oleinik on the feet, because he will get caught with a knee. I'm calling that right now. At featherweight, we have the returning Charles Rosa against Derek Minor. And then once again, women in the co-main event, Caitlin Vieira against Yana Kunitskaya. Both women coming off of victories, so this should be a fun one. Both prospects in that women's bantamweight division. Then we have the main event, Curtis Blaydes against Derek Lewis. I completely expect this fight to go the full five, with Derek Lewis possibly finishing Curtis Blaydes in the last 45 seconds. We've waited for this fight for a while. I believe that one of these guys will get a title shot within the next year and a half. Yes, that is a long time from now, but hey, that's how the heavyweight division works. So good luck to these two guys. It's always fun to see Derek Lewis in there, and Curtis Blaydes is so fantastic. You know, I make the joke about him just, you know, wrestle effing Derek Lewis, but hey, that's what you got to do to win, you know, and you're in there to win. So if you watch highlights of Curtis Blaydes, you can see why he's so successful. He's always threatening the level change, which is fantastic. If you really like to watch MMA, watch the highlight that ESPN MMA posted of Curtis Blaydes, and watch how he just engages with his opponent. It is crazy. He is so damn talented, man. I'm looking forward to this fight. With all jokes aside, I am looking forward to this fight. But that has been another episode of YBE MMA. I am Josh Prepigina. You can find me on all forms of social media, Elroy Preps in one word. You can find the show on Instagram at YBE MMA Podcast. If it's your birthday, happy birthday. Enjoy the fights this weekend, and we'll see you next day.